Friends, my question for you is, how far down on that vision chart could you see this morning? Probably not very far for most of us, right? I wear contacts, so I know without them I couldn't see very far. Even with them, probably not even that far down on that little sign right there. And yet, it is in our vision. It's in our ability to see that God so often comes to us and asks us to look, to behold, to see. Over and over and over again, these invitations, these commands are found throughout Scripture. God wants us to look, to see beyond our current narrow, insular viewpoint. Because let's be honest, most of the time our world tends to collapse in on itself, doesn't it? And we can only see what is right here in front of us. It's part of our survival instinct. It's part of our fight and flight and all of those kinds of things, right? We have to be able to see right here to protect ourselves. And yet, if we're going to get beyond this moment, and if we're ever going to get out of survival, we have to look up. We have to look beyond. We have to see more than the immediate. What is God up to in the midst of our lives? What is God up to in the midst of our church? What is God up to in the midst of our world? Can we see beyond the latest phone call from a doctor? Can we see beyond the latest bill that is in the mail? Can we see beyond the latest crisis that is presenting itself on our screens? Can we see beyond? Are we willing to see beyond? Are we allowing a space of the holy to infect us, to spread in us and go, oh, I see a future, an incredible future. Now, until this morning, how many of you had ever cracked open the Bible to the book of Haggai? Okay, a few of you, but most of you were like looking at the ground at that point, right? Haggai, you're like, I didn't even know there was a book in the Bible called Haggai for many of you, right? It's like, you get into these minor prophets at the end of the Old Testament, and they all sort of flow together for most of us, right? You know, if I say Isaiah or Jeremiah, most church-going people are like, I've heard of those. I know those ones, right? And then I go Ezekiel, and you're going, yeah, I think that's in there, right? But then if I say, like, the word Hezekiah, whose name is in the Bible, many of you go, oh, that's a book in the Bible. It's not, okay? Because when we get into these 12 minor prophets, I lose most people, right? So let me go into professor mode for just a moment, because we do need a little biblical education here, okay? Because we have Isaiah, Jeremiah, Lamentations, Ezekiel, Daniel, and then most people trail off after that, right? Because after that we have Hosea. Does anyone know who comes after Hosea? Joel, Amos, Obadiah. I know one you know, Jonah. That's what's next. Micah, Nahum, Habakkuk. Did you even know that one was in there? Okay. Zephaniah, and then Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi. And these books, they all flow together because most of the time we don't even know what was going on in history during these periods of time. Somewhere along the line, some of you memorized just enough history to pass a test, right? And then you let it all flow away, right? Yeah, for sure. And some of you didn't even get that far, and you're like, I'm going to take the D on that test today, right? Let's be honest, right? So here's what's happening in the world around some of these books. The people of Israel were split into two kingdoms, northern kingdom named Israel, southern kingdom named Judah. The Assyrian Empire came in and sacked the northern group, the people of Israel, and took them off into captivity. They didn't actually take all of them into captivity, only took all the educated rich people off in the captivity. If you were poor, you got to stay in the land and try to survive, okay? Then the southern group, they got taken over by the Babylonians because the Babylonians took over the Assyrians, right? And that's where we get into a book like, Isaiah and a book like Daniel, right? So Daniel's off in Babylon, remember? All of those kinds of Daniel's in the lion den stories right there. He's in Babylon when that happens, right? There's a guy named Nebuchadnezzar. Anything this ringing a bell for any of you who grew up in Sunday school? Okay. Here we go. From there, this is where I lose like everybody. Because what happens is the Persians come in and take over the Babylonians. They conquer them. Okay? They sack Babylon. Okay? And that's under King Cyrus. And Cyrus was like, why do we have all of these captives everywhere? We should probably send them back to their homeland. And the first group of Jewish captives go back to the place of Israel. And we encounter a whole other section of the Bible that no one knows anything about. Ezra, Nehemiah, and Esther. And sometimes people are like, oh, I've heard of Esther. I know that story, right? But when I say Ezra and Nehemiah, people are like, I don't really know what happened in those books. Those books are about rebuilding the temple and rebuilding the walls of Jerusalem, okay? And that's where we get into this book, Haggai. Haggai comes in about 75 years after some of that had happened. And the temple foundation had been laid in Ezra chapters 1 through 3. You still following me? Sort of? Okay? There won't be a test after this, okay? So you're okay. But that's the context here, okay? What happened was Cyrus was a great ruler. He was amazing. He was this warrior. He sacked Babylon, did all those kinds of things. Then, like all the things happen around the world, he died, right? And when he died, guess who came to power? His son, right? Because that's how the world works, right there. And his son was a bit of a warrior as well. Went off conquering kingdoms, went and conquered the Egyptians, okay? And then on the way back from conquering the Egyptians, he dies. Yeah, right. He did the thing that was hard and then probably died of some random disease, right? So he only ruled for about 12 years, right? And then, as all things do, when the general dies coming back, guess what happens to the kingdom, right? The Persian Empire falls into a level of crisis that is crazy, right? And then a new general rises up. His name is, let's see, how did you pronounce it? Darius? Darius? Yeah, sure, you know, one of those names. There was a reason why I assigned that to him, and he was right. Yes, okay? I'm going to say Darius, because that's how I learned it. Okay, so Darius comes to the throne, and Darius is a good bureaucrat. And although here in the United States, in the 21st century, we don't like the term bureaucrat, around the world and throughout history, bureaucrat means order, right? It means governance. It means some semblance of peace. And Darius brings that kind of peace and order to the Persian Empire. And that's the context for the book of Haggai right here, is that there's just enough order that's being established that the people here now in Jerusalem get to look around and go, hey, what's next? And Haggai comes from this voice of God and says, look beyond yourselves. Look beyond this moment of crisis that you've been in. Look to what God might do. You've laid this this foundation. In fact, he's really saying, your grandparents laid this foundation here in the temple. What will you do with it now? And there's this whole generation of folks who are those grandparents, who are hanging around, right, doing their thing, and they're like, this just isn't the way it was. I remember when things were splendid. I remember when this temple was amazing. I remember Ezra's vision of what God wanted to do among us. And Haggai comes into all the people and says, look beyond what was. Look beyond the former things and see the amazing thing that God is about to do among you, in your lives, in your people. And I want you to take a moment, Covenant, and think about us as a church for a moment. Now, I've only been around you all for about 2.5, 3 years. And I've seen a lot happen in those 2.5 and 3 years. I've seen things among us. I see what God is doing in the midst of us. I look out on this crowd and I see people that I didn't know just 2.5 years ago. I see people in and among our ministries showing up during the week that I go, oh, that person wasn't there before. I see imagination happening. I see people aware of us in the community for the first time in a long time. And we can be tempted to believe that just because all of these pews aren't filled, that somehow things aren't going to be what they ever were. Anyone ever tempted to feel that way around here? Right? What if God is up to something among us? What if God is doing something new and is waiting on you and me to catch the vision? What if God is waiting on you and me to take a step, to take an action, to get involved, to go, oh, wait a minute, this is new. And new is not bad. New might mean something even better than where those glory days took us before. In history, the temple eventually gets rebuilt. It's nothing like Solomon's original temple. It's not nearly as splendid. It's not nearly as glorious, but guess what actually happens among the people? For the first time in Jewish history, the people go from a tribal people to a culture, to a religion, to something that has endured for 2,500 years since this prophecy in Haggai. See, everything that we see in the Old Testament is a group of people who never really get it. But after this, the Jewish people coalesce into a religious, ethnic, cultural group that is held together across time in a way that almost no other groups throughout history have done so. Through thick and thin, through crisis, through Holocaust, this people have held together. And just because the temple never became what it was in its former time, the people became everything that God had ever hoped for, all the way back into Exodus. They became this group of people who endured, who have spread across the world, who have rituals and religious traditions that span across the entire continent of the world. No one could have imagined that when Haggai gave his prophecy. No one could have imagined that when those words were uttered. And you and I can get caught in thinking that the vision for the future looks like what it did in the past. We can get caught in this and this and this liturgy that we have here and think this has to be all that there is, when God actually wants us to go beyond this. Think larger than this. Allow our hearts to expand beyond this room and begin thinking about all of Greenwood Village, all of DTC, all of the people that might be part of this covenant community 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. Right, man, we're starting to get into people's timelines of death now, aren't we? I'm serious about that. Right? 30 years, 50 years, 100 years. What happens when we eclipse our own individual timeline and have a vision that is larger than self? Then I know I'm caught up in something divine. Then I know I'm caught in something that is so much larger than my own desires, than my own little imaginative world. What if you and I look towards what God has in store for us? And us is larger than the people in this room. Will you take the challenge and look and see and behold?